John, will Mitch play with the ones against the Titans?
Again, we haven't talked about that. Obviously, we're very, very early. We're not even in the preparation for the Titans yet. So we'll meet on that. We'll talk, and we'll keep you guys posted.
Is there a way to give Trubisky first-team reps without being an affront to Mike Glennon as the starter?
I think probably not.
Cheers, Bears fans! This is Bears Barroom Radio. I am Aldo Gandia, and that was, of course, Chicago Bears head coach John Fox addressing the media on Monday about the growing controversy he has on his hands. Check out my story at bearsbarroom.com about how Fox and general manager Ryan Pace got into what is clearly a mess. If Mike Glennon begins the season as the number one quarterback while continuing to play like a backup, and franchise quarterback Mitch Trubisky is the backup while continuing to play like a number one quarterback, then Bears management may need to hire a PR firm to navigate through what will surely be fan unrest. But before you begin reading, I want to get to our featured interviews. I have today back-to-back interviews with two of the key members of BearsWire.com. We'll hear first from Brian Perez, the site editor of the USA Today-owned BearsWire.com, and then we'll talk to Lauren Cox, who holds an honorary guest pass here at the Barroom and is part of the BearsWire.com family. After that, please stick around. I've got some updates on what we're doing here at the Barroom, and I need your help in order to get some stuff done. But first, let's get to Brian Perez, and trust me, you're going to like this. Brian Perez is the NFL site editor over at TheBearsWire.com, and he's the publisher of DraftBreakdown.com. Brian, thanks for being on the show.
My pleasure, Aldo, anytime.
First time we've had a chance to talk, and I really admired your work. You do excellent, excellent work, and BearsWire.com is necessary reading daily for everyone. Tell us a little bit about DraftBreakdown.com, because I know it's an invaluable tool for anyone that's breaking down tape out there, but some of our listeners may not be familiar with it. Tell us about it.
Sure. DraftBreakdown.com is what I like to call the leading resource for the NFL draft for fans who really want to educate themselves on the incoming class of prospects, because, you know, as we all know, when you, especially if you spend any time on Twitter and the quote-unquote draft Twitter, there's opinions that fly daily on every NFL draft prospect, from the early round guys to the deep sleepers for day three. But it's always been my opinion that the best opinion is your own, and the only way to really form that is through education. And Draft Breakdown provides fans with basically scouting tape of just about any prospect that's coming out. So what we do is we take a three-hour football game. So let's just use a popular name, Sam Darnold, for example. And instead of having to use your DVR to record it and then, you know, fast forward to the commercials and whatnot, Draft Breakdown does all the dirty work for you. So you come on the site, you take any one of the probably dozen or so games now, of all of his games from last year are already on the site. And it breaks his full game down to maybe an 8 to 12-minute clip with every one of his passing reps, whether it's a good throw, bad throw, takes a sack, whatever it might be. So you can really educate yourself on the kind of player that you think he is. And then you could take that opinion, publish it on your own website, you know, tweet about it and whatnot. So hopefully it helps educate the draft community instead of watching highlight films or just reading other draft analysts' regurgitated opinions. You know, people can come on our site and form your own.
And over at BearsWire.com, one of your most recent posts, you shared five takeaways from the second preseason game. One of those takeaways was about rookie safety Eddie Jackson, who you think is working his way into a starting role. Tell our audience what you saw in Jackson, what do you like about him, and do you have any concerns about his play?
You know, first and foremost with Jackson, I think what we're seeing with him is something that Bears fans haven't experienced with the safety position since really Mike Brown left town. And that's instincts, a guy who just has a knack to put himself where he needs to be to potentially either break up a pass or secure an interception. He also is intelligent against the run. He could sniff out the offense's play quickly. And I just think that when you look at him as an overall, from his physical makeup, the length that he has, if you looked at the game last week against Arizona, the ball that he broke up in the end zone, that a safety without his kind of length might not have been able to get their hand on the ball, and who knows, that could have ultimately been a touchdown catch. He's got some special attributes, and I think if he was healthy in his final year at Alabama, he probably would have been a second-round pick. Who knows, he might have even inched his way into the late first round. So for the Bears to grab him in the fourth round, he's a talent that's far superior to the general fourth rounders that we see come in and out every year. And when you look at who's on the roster right now, Adrian Amos has been an admirable starter. He's been maybe average or slightly above average. I mean, I know he's gotten some good press from Pro Football Focus over the summer and as that unknown superstar in the Bears roster, but I'm a little cooler on his opinion than on his assessment than most. And I just think that the starting job is ripe for the taking. And Eddie Jackson through the first two preseason games, I think if you're watching the games closely, it's hard not to see him flash on defense. And the Bears need a guy like that. You know, the veteran that they signed, Quentin Demps, he's going to be a massive upgrade just from a leadership experience and turnover creation standpoint. But Eddie Jackson is that young, athletic, sideline-to-sideline guy who, you know, he's the kind of player that you want on that third level of a defense to break up a timely big play, make a timely big play. And then you add in his special teams qualities where I know he struggled with fielding one of the punts last week on Saturday against the Cardinals, but overall he probably, you know, looks at least right now like the guy who would flip the field the fastest as a punt returner. So I think, you know, he's a two-way player in terms of punt returning and as a starting safety, and I really think the Bears struck gold with him in the fourth round.
Now, one of the knocks on Jackson when he came out was that he played with a dominant Alabama defense, particularly up front, which allowed him to kind of sit back and not have to worry about making a lot of tackles, which he statistically did not. Are you satisfied enough that he can become a consistent tackle at the NFL level?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things I try to ignore when I'm doing my draft analysis is, you know, a guy can't, you know, you can't fault a guy for being on a team with really good teammates. I mean, it's not like you know, he chose to have a bunch of five-star recruits lining up at defensive line and outside linebacker, inside linebacker, who were stuffing the run consistently. So it's almost like Marcus Mariota when he was coming out. The big knock was, you know, he played in this spread offense. He's not going to be able to transition to a pro-style offense once he gets to the NFL. And it's, you know, you can't fault a guy for doing something that you haven't seen him fail at. You know, it's not like Eddie Jackson failed at it in college. If he didn't have as many opportunities to put his ability on tape because of the talent that was around him, you know, it is what it is. You're taking a little bit of a roll of the dice that he will be competent at it on the next level. And I think in preseason what we've seen is he's going to be a good all-around safety, if not very good. Potentially, you know, I don't want to, you know, jump the gun here and say an elite safety, but he's got the making to be that kind of a special player for the Bears. And I'm not worried at all about, you know, the box score that may not have been as full as analysts would have liked to have seen in the tackling department and coming up in run support. I think what we've seen already through a couple of weeks of preseason is that he's more than capable of being a guy like that.
Well, and they say that competition breeds better play, and I have sensed a overall better safety play in the two preseason games, at least to my eye. And additionally, Pro Football Focus ranked DeAndre Houston Carson. They graded him as the highest score for Bears players in that second preseason game. I've seen some good play out of Deion Bush. Adrian Amos is sort of that same reliable, well, not perfect safety, and you've mentioned Quentin Demps. Is it safe to say that maybe the Bears' safety problems are over?
Yeah, I don't know if you can necessarily declare them over until the bullets fly for real in September.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's obvious. You know, it's obvious for fans and analysts who have studied the Bears on a weekly basis for the last several seasons that the level of talent is higher. And when the level of talent in the safety room elevates, the competition, like you had mentioned, naturally goes up. You know, if a guy like Deion Bush, who, you know, he had some warts coming out as a college prospect, but if you go into a pro organization and you still are one of the more talented safeties on the roster, it's hard to get that dog to come out in a guy and see his true maximum potential. All of a sudden, in one offseason, Deion Bush went from a fourth rounder with the potential to start as a rookie to a bubble roster guy because they signed Quentin Demps, drafted Eddie Jackson. He now has to fight for his job, fight for his livelihood. So that does bring out the best in these guys. And it's also, you can't discount the jump from year one to year two. You mentioned DeAndre Houston Carson, Deion Bush. These are young players who, you know, you'd like to see that development in the second and third season. They didn't come in as first-round guys, you know, like a Jamal Adams for the Jets this year. There's no learning curve for him. He has to come in, be an impact guy right away. When you're a fourth and a sixth round pick, respectively, there is a natural learning curve that's expected to take place with these guys. So, you know, if they're not making that jump from their rookie season to their second year, if they're not looking more like a pro in that second training camp, that's a problem. Then you have to start questioning whether there's a long-term role for them on the roster. It looks like they're making that next step in their career progression. Neither one of them are going to be expected to start this year. They'll probably be core special teamers, assuming they make the team. But then by year three, maybe even year four, you know, who knows what this safety group looks like. You know, Quentin Demps isn't the youngest guy in the world, so it's good to have these young developing guys, even as second, third teamers moving forward.
Now, another takeaway that you had in your BearsWire.com post is that you really like what you're seeing out of Tariq Cohen, and you think that he is set to be the primary backup for Jordan Howard. Now, you stated that both Jeremy Langford and Kadeem Carey are fighting for a roster spot, and maybe we might not see any one of those two guys on the roster. Tell me more about that and where you see Benny Cunningham figuring in on this battle.
Yeah, I loved the Benny Cunningham signing when Ryan Pace made it in the offseason during free agency. And when he made that, when that transaction was announced and the Bears secured Cunningham services, I immediately expected Cunningham through training camp and the preseason, to end up being Jordan Howard's, the number two guy, the backup running back. Tariq Cohen's been a very pleasant surprise for me. I crushed the pick when they made it. I was just, you know, when a 5'6" running back is drafted in the fourth round, you know, I always say it's dangerous to compare a player to Darren Sproles until you see him on the NFL level. And, you know, I'm eating crow right now because this guy looks like the next coming of Darren Sproles. So with Cohen and Cunningham is playing exactly as I would have expected him to. He's a guy that can fill in for Jordan Howard and start games in the NFL if he has to. He's a good running back. And you add his special teams abilities, that's what separates that second and third running back from the fourth and fifth guys that fight for a job. Cohen, to me, has been the real, real surprise, quote-unquote, star so far for the Bears through two games of the preseason, because I don't think anybody would have expected a 5'6", 186-pound, whatever he is, guy to potentially be Jordan Howard's fill-in if Jordan Howard missed any extended period of time. But he's proving he can run between the tackles. He can break through NFL arm tackles, which is shocking to me. I never would have imagined that he would be able to do that. He can run inside. He can run outside. And he has a borderline rare burst that is, it's so evident and obvious on the field that he's playing at a different speed than even, you know, seasoned NFL veteran linebackers and cornerbacks and safety. So I think he's secured that number two role with relative ease, with Benny Cunningham's special teams ability separating him as that number three guy from Carey, who is a good special teams player, and Jeremy Langford, who honestly I just don't see any chance that he makes the final roster, despite the depth chart not being updated, and Langford still being the number two guy. I just think that's, you know, just a lack of effort or not really an honest approach from the Bears coaching staff to let the media and fans know what the depth chart currently looks like. But, you know, you just mentioned the safety position, Aldo, and there's a lot of guys who look like they deserve to make the final roster. And then when it comes down, when you have positions that are deep like safety, maybe outside linebacker, who knows what they're going to do at wide receiver, the more guys you keep at any one of these other positions, the less you can keep at, let's say, running back. Mm-hmm. You know, Kadeem Carey's had 3 years, going on 4 years now at Chicago to prove what he is. We all know what he is. He's an okay running back. He has his moments where he runs tough, breaks tackles, but he's hit his ceiling. You know, his ceiling was basically hit at the University of Arizona. He's just not a special NFL talent. And unless he really has some high-impact special teams plays over the next couple weeks, I don't see him making the roster. And Jeremy Langford, like they say, the old adage is your best ability is availability, and he's just proven incapable of that. Even when he's been on the field, he's averaged at best 3.6 yards a carry. Last year was 3.2. I think we've seen enough of Jeremy Langford, and I don't think you're going to keep a guy like that over one of these young up-and-coming safeties, especially when Chicago has a franchise running back in Jordan Howard, an exciting rookie in Tariq Cohen, an all-around talent, including special teams at Benny Cunningham. I don't think you're going to keep a guy like Langford or Carey over one of these younger developing safeties.
You know, what's interesting about Cohen is that he's already shown that he's much, much better than Jeremy Langford at picking up yards after contact. The Chicago Tribune reported that he gained 52 yards after contact in the last preseason game, gaining yards after contact on 9 of his 11 carries, whereas we've seen Jeremy Langford time after time after time again go down immediately when he's touched. So you make some very good points about what the running back situation and the depth issues going on there. Now,
and you know what, Aldo? Yes. Just speaking about Langford a little more, when I was studying that his draft class, I think it was the 2015 draft, that was who he was at Michigan State too. I mean, if you pop in the Michigan State tape, you will see Jeremy Langford's inability to break tackles. And it's followed him into the NFL. And whether or not does he have enough playmaking ability to overcome that glaring deficiency in his game? So if you're going to keep a guy like Jeremy Langford because of maybe a few big plays he made as a rookie versus looking at what a truly exciting, special, field-flipping running back like Tariq Cohen can put together when he gets reps, it's obvious what a real game-breaking running back looks like, especially when that game-breaker has the ability to also lower his head and pick up some tough yards after contact. So there's nothing about Jeremy Langford to me that suggests he's going to be able to overcome his weaknesses. And especially if he's got a bum ankle, if he's just not getting back to 100%, I just don't see any way he ends up with the Bears.
Now, you talked about numbers. The tight end position is one that we have to watch closely because there's a lot of players there who are deserving of a roster spot, in my opinion. How do you break down the tight end depth issue going on with the Chicago Bears?
Yeah, this is another position group that I think you might have to sacrifice veteran experience in an effort to keep young ascending talent. Because, my opinion with the Bears right now as it currently stands is they have a defense that has the potential to be a quote-unquote playoff caliber defense. Not that they'll be a playoff team, but they have a defense that has the potential to play at a level that would be consistent with playoff qualifiers. That said, they're probably going to hover around 7 wins, 6 wins, 8 wins. Maybe we get pleasantly surprised with a Mitch Trubisky, special rookie season if he ever gets the chance. But assuming that the Bears are still a season, maybe a new coaching staff away from really taking that next step in franchise development, I don't see how you would keep a guy like Zach Miller over a player like Daniel Brown or even Ben Bronecker, because, we know what Zach Miller is. He's a good receiver. He's adequate as a run blocker, but he is fragile. He's an injury waiting to happen. When he made a catch last Saturday against the Cardinals and he got drilled on the sideline, I was convinced he was going to walk off with it, shaking his head, another concussion. He's one of those guys you have to hold your breath every time he gets hit. He brings something to the offense. He definitely has value, but if you're building a club from the 53rd man up, you want to make sure that you're not sacrificing a young ascending player that a year or two from now, when the team is really ready to probably challenge for maybe even the NFC North, that you didn't give up a guy who would be more productive, more available than Zach Miller 2 years from now. What's he going to be, 34 years old, more fragile than he is now? He's in the last year of his deal, if my memory serves me correctly. I just don't see how he would stick around. I think Shaheen has been he's been okay in preseason. I think he's still getting the NFL jitters out of his system. You see when he catches the ball, it's almost like his legs are moving faster than his brain is figuring out where to go. He's kind of like a baby giraffe tripping over himself right now. But but the potential that he has is obvious. I mean, he does look like a baby Gronkowski out on the field. I like Deion Sims a lot. I think he is a really good all-around player. He's going to make plays in the passing game. He's going to be a really effective run blocker. And then you look at, are they going to keep 4 tight ends? Are they only going to keep 3? If you're telling me that they're only going to keep 3 tight ends, I would sign Daniel Brown to that 53rd man, to that final 53-man roster before Zach Miller probably 10 out of 10 times. And it's not because Zach Miller is not a good player. It's because Zach Miller doesn't fit the trending, the direction that this team is trending. And I just don't see it.
Yeah, I'm a Zach Miller fan, but I totally agree with your take on that. And I got to tell you, you present your case like a seasoned attorney. I wonder why that is, Mr. Perez.
I plead the fifth.
Very, very good. Now, I got to get your take on this Mitch Trubisky situation. John Fox with the media on Monday played coy about whether Trubisky was going to see any starting time with the number ones. It's something that Lauren Cox and I are going to talk about briefly, but I want to get your take. Do you think that Trubisky deserves time with the number ones in this all-important third preseason game, or do you think that Ryan Pace and John Fox should just kind of continue with the plan of slowly developing Trubisky and handing the starting job to Mike Glennon?
Mitch Trubisky should have been named the starting quarterback of the Bears on the Friday morning after their first preseason game. The fact that they are continuing this ridiculous off-season narrative of this is Mike Glennon's season, and basically there is absolutely no chance or opportunity for Mitchell Trubisky to work his way into the starting lineup is football negligence. It's malpractice as a coaching staff. It's the most ridiculous thing I've ever experienced as a Bears fan, Bears analyst, across the entire league, you know, from national media to local media to fans on Twitter. It doesn't take a quarterback whisperer to see that Mitchell Trubisky is clearly the better option for the Bears at quarterback, despite 13 collegiate starts, despite his status as a rookie. You watch last week's game, and I know Trubisky played against third stringers, and everybody's going to use that as the automatic comeback to dismiss his preseason success. But still, football is football, and players are in game situations on the field, whether it's against first teamers or third teamers, and how they handle themselves, the reads they make, the accuracy of their ball placement, that doesn't change. Mike Glennon looks like the inexperienced rookie, and Mitch Trubisky looks like the veteran that was signed in free agency expected to start for the season. The fact that John Fox is doing his typical anti-rookie stance is extremely frustrating, especially for a fan base and an organization that experienced probably, I guess you could say, the ultimate quarterback tease over the last seven seasons or eight seasons with Jay Cutler. It looks like they finally have a guy who has the chance to be a special, special player at the position. And the Bears are not giving him a chance to showcase that with starters or even backups. I mean, I think anybody would agree that Andy Reid knows the quarterback position better than John Fox. Andy Reid is handling Patrick Mahomes in a completely different manner than what the Bears are doing. He's giving Patrick Mahomes reps with at least second teamers, extended reps in the preseason, promoted him to the backup to Alex Smith. And here we are. We're going into week three of the preseason, and Mitch Trubisky is still listed as a third teamer behind Mark Sanchez, who everyone and their grandmother knows has no chance of starting a game for the Chicago Bears, even if Mike Glennon gets some unfortunate injury tomorrow in practice. Sanchez is not going to be the starter. The fact that the Bears are being stubborn with this is alarming. It makes me concerned about the decision-making with the coaching staff. And I think it's really putting the club, the franchise, in a detrimental position, because the only way for Mitch Trubisky to gain the experience that everybody is saying he's lacking is to play. And what we've seen through the first 2 weeks of the preseason is that even with that inexperience, he's going to play competitive football at quarterback for the Bears. He will have some very bad moments. Every rookie does. He will make some throws that are absolutely atrocious. Every rookie does. He will hold the ball too long. Every rookie does. But he also has traits that Mike Glennon, on his best day, will never, ever have. He can escape the pocket. He has the athletic ability that can make up for the weakness of the offensive line, which is that offensive tackle. Mike Glennon is a wounded duck back there. He's going to get destroyed when Bobby Massey, you know, has one of his typical olays with a defensive end, probably sometime in week one. Mitch Trubisky has the ability to keep a play alive with his legs. I don't know about you, Aldo, but some of the throws that Trubisky has made, the ball placement, the accuracy, it's rare. That's something that cannot be coached, that even with game experience, you don't gain that accuracy, the way where he puts the ball exactly where he wants it. When you have traits like Trubisky's, where he has plenty of arm strength to make every throw, has elite accuracy and top-end mobility, he'll make up for his lack of experience with those traits. Look at what the Philadelphia Eagles did with Donovan McNabb an eternity ago, I think back in 1999. McNabb wasn't expected to start the season. Doug Peterson, I think, was the guy who started that year. McNabb was going to sit. He was going to sit. He was going to sit. He was going to gain experience behind Peterson. And then come midseason, McNabb takes the field, and his ability to keep plays alive with his legs, to get himself out of chaotic situations, made him look like a seasoned veteran that year. You know, sometimes you have to just bank on the guy's traits and not think that they're going to learn more in the coach's room, in the quarterback room, or on the practice field. They're going to learn on the field. And in today's day and age, you know, it's a what have you done for me lately league. We'll be sitting here next offseason with Mike Glennon released. He'll be off the Chicago Bears. And then Mitch Trubisky is going to enter his first season as a starter, almost a year back in the development of the overall development of the franchise. Play him. Play him next week with the starters. Line him up week one as a starter against the Atlanta Falcons. He's shown enough on the field through two. If they want to be defined as meaningless preseason games, that's fine. But he's shown enough as an NFL quarterback to warrant starting right now for the Bears. I don't know about you, Aldo, but Mike Glennon gives me nightmares. I mean, it reminds me of the pre-Cutler era when we had guys like Jonathan Quinn starting and all these other, I mean, Todd Collins, I think that's the Collins that was starting for the Bears at one point. I mean, it was a disaster. Chad Hutchinson. These names are the laundry list of washout quarterbacks that played for the Bears is a mile long. And Mike Glennon looks like every one of them in this preseason. The throw he made against the Arizona Cardinals when he tried to escape the pocket, threw off his back foot, a ball that went into a sea of three or four red Cardinals defenders. That was one of the worst throws I've seen all preseason, really in the last season of football. That's what you expect from a guy that's playing with the third team who might not make the roster. Trubisky comes in and goes 6 for 8, throws a touchdown, looks like a poised, composed veteran quarterback. And John Fox can't summon the confidence or just whatever it is to admit the fact that, hey, we had a plan. That's now in the trash bin. Trubisky's our starter. We all see it. You all see it. It's as obvious as the day is long. This kid's the best quarterback on this roster. He's starting day one. The fact that they're not doing that, it's coaching malpractice.
I wrote a column for my website, bearsbarroom.com, where I said that Ryan Pace put up this whole big charade during the offseason to try to convince other NFL general managers that he was not drafting a quarterback in the first round. So he went out and signed Mike Glennon to what appeared to be a starting quarterback contract with the $18 million guaranteed, 4-year deal and so forth. All of that to make people believe that he was going to bypass a quarterback in round one, because in reality, he had his targets on Trubisky from months before. And so he went through all this trouble of landing Glennon and then getting the opportunity and successfully manipulating his way to get Trubisky, and now he's stuck with that Glennon guy, whereas he could have just targeted Brian Hoyer, brought him in as the bridge quarterback. Everyone would have known that he was drafting a quarterback, and then play the cards right to get Trubisky, his favorite quarterback. So the plan is, in essence, backfiring on him a little bit. But I think this is all a result of Pace's master plan, and it's an imperfect one, unfortunately.
You know what, Aldo, that's a great point. I would modify it and tweak it in one small area.
Please.
I don't think Ryan Pace is stuck with Mike Glennon. I think Ryan Pace is stuck with John Fox. I think the problem here is John Fox, for one reason or another, is a stubborn, old-school coach who never, ever, ever gives the rookie that benefit of the doubt. That, you know, it's only one preseason game. We're not changing the depth chart after one preseason game, was what he said. I mean, I don't know what he was watching during that first preseason game, but Mitchell Trubisky's performance, albeit against guys who may not be playing in the NFL this season, his performance was borderline special. Pro Football Focus said that his adjusted completion percentage or accuracy rating was the highest in the last 3 years of any rookie quarterback in the NFL. The fact that Fox cannot get off this grumpy old man stance and just let Mitch Trubisky, you know, put him behind the wheel of the car and just let him go. I think it's really a lot about Fox, because at the end of the day, the head coach is going to be the one who I would assume is making the final roster decisions. And that includes not only who's making the team, but who's starting on the team. So Ryan Pace might be sitting in the back seat now saying, man, I see it like everybody else. Why wouldn't Fox name him the starter? And I know general managers and coaches can collaborate on these decisions, but I just watching Brian Pace, I was down at the Senior Bowl this year, and I saw how he, you know, interacted with the media. I saw how he was interacting with the Bears coaching staff. You can see he respects those boundaries. He respects the boundaries of coaches being coaches, making the on-field decisions. And I have a feeling, even if he disagrees with it, he might not interfere with John Fox's strategy or philosophy in terms of the quarterback position. And, you know, when you talk about Ryan Pace's master plan, it was so obvious now. Hindsight's 20/20, but down at the Senior Bowl, he was giving quotes to the media saying, you know, when you're evaluating a quarterback, experience is critically important,
right?
So the ultimate smokescreen, you would think, oh, he's going to Deshaun Watson. I mean, if he's going to draft a quarterback based on experience in this class, that's Deshaun Watson. He's the most experienced, big game, winning quarterback in this class. Trubisky would have to be eliminated from that draft board if Ryan Pace was actually telling the truth. Ryan Pace was obviously playing the ultimate game of general manager poker with those comments, because if someone behind him wanted Trubisky, if they took him at his, at his word, they would assume he wasn't targeting him if experience truly was a trait he valued. So I think you're right. Trubisky has been his guy from day one. So it would shock me if internally he's not being eaten alive, that his guy, his hand-picked, most important draft pick of his entire career. If Trubisky fails, Ryan Pace gets fired. If Trubisky hits, Ryan Pace is the general manager of the Bears as long as he wants to, as long as he wants to be. So you know he's got an allegiance to Trubisky, even though he may have quote unquote promised Mike Glennon the starting job. This is the NFL. This is a big boy league. You know, promises get broken all the time. Mm-hmm. It has nothing to do with, you know, no offense, but don't mean to hurt your feelings, but it is a what have you done for me lately league. And what we have seen in 2 weeks of the preseason is Mike Glennon is an incompetent starting quarterback. He was a backup in Tampa Bay for a reason. Tampa Bay signed Josh McCown when Glennon was going into his second season for a reason. They drafted Jameis Winston with the number one pick overall despite Glennon's presence on the roster for a reason. He's not valued on that level of current NFL quarterback play. And we're seeing it. I mean, I don't understand. It's like I want to bang my head into the wall, Aldo. I mean, we're seeing this play out on the field. And when John Fox makes comments like, you know, they don't compare player versus player on the practice field, like they're not comparing Mike Glennon's performance to Mitch Trubisky's performance because of, I guess, context and different situations. I mean, how do you make a decision on who starts then? What are you evaluating? If you're not evaluating their practice performance and you're not evaluating the clear and obvious superior play by Trubisky in preseason games, there's nothing else that can make this. There's no other explanation than John Fox being stuck in his ways, stubborn, I'm going to trust the veteran, not the rookie. And I think Pace ultimately is probably just counting down the days until he could finally hire a young coach, a forward-thinking coach, a coach who gets it more than John Fox. I mean, John Fox looks like a guy who has just completely checked out and is waiting until, you know, he can maybe be a broadcaster on one of these NFL Sunday pregame shows, whatever he might end up doing in his next phase of his football career. But for any coach, and this goes for Dowell Loggins and the Bears quarterback coach, for any of them to be able to get in front of the media and justifiably say or justify their position that Mike Glennon has maintained his hold on the starter's job is laughable. I mean, look what's happening in Cleveland. Brock Osweiler has arguably played better than Mike Glennon in the preseason, and Brock Osweiler has been horrible, and they are now making a decision on whether DeShone Kizer will be the week one starter. DeShone Kizer has not done anything better than Mitchell Trubisky in the preseason. The difference is Hugh Jackson is an offensive-minded coach. He gets it. He's going to put the player, despite his inexperience, because, you know, DeShone Kizer doesn't have that much more experience than Trubisky as a prospect. He's going to put the player that gives them the best chance to win. The Browns aren't going anywhere this year. We all know that. A lot of NFL analysts compare the Browns and Bears as colleagues amongst the NFL's worst teams. They're going to go with DeShone Kizer. The Chiefs promoted Patrick Mahomes to a backup quarterback. The Texans, there's this debate, Savage versus Watson. But yet in Chicago, it's Mike Glennon or bust. It's again, I've used this phrase a couple times, but it is coaching malpractice.
His name is Brian Perez. He is the site editor over at BearsWire.com and the publisher of DraftBreakdown.com. Brian, tell our followers where they can find you on Twitter.
Sure. I try to be as active as I can on Twitter. I love going back and forth with Bears fans, NFL draft fans. You can find me at Brian Perez NFL, and that's Brian with a Y.
Very good. Anything you want to promote coming up?
No, man, you just keep doing your thing. I love the podcast. I love what you guys do over at the Bears Barroom. You know, the cast of analysts that you have on a regular basis. I love listening to their takes as Bears fans and analysts. You know, it's a high-level Bears commentary with some tongue-in-cheek comedy as well. So you guys keep doing your thing. And anytime, man, it was a lot of fun joining you on the show.
Likewise. I can't wait to talk to you again. Thanks, Brian.
You got it, Albert.
Okay, Lauren Cox is a contributor at BearsWire.com. He's the host of Locked On Bears, a daily podcast covering your favorite team, and an analyst at Pro Football Focus. Also, a frequent guest on the Bears Barroom Radio Network. And Lauren has also recently posted a 50-page Bears preview guide that is totally free. Lauren, welcome to the show, and tell our listeners how they can access your free guide.
Yeah, thanks for having me again, although it's good to be back in the barroom. My guide you can go to, it's bit.ly, is bit.ly, it's a link shortening service. It's bit.ly/Bears2017preview, and you have to capitalize the B in Bears and the P in preview, but it's bit.ly/Bears2017preview.
And they can also go to Twitter. You have the link posted at the top of your Twitter feed, correct?
Correct.
All right. Now, on your last two shows over at the Locked On Bears, that's the daily podcast people can find on multiple outlets like Audioboom or iTunes, you devoted each show to reviewing the one show to reviewing the offense, and then the second show to reviewing the defense. And this is from the game tape of the Arizona Cardinals match. Can you identify for me one thing on offense that most people in the media and fans on social media did not notice or talk enough about, something that you spotted that you think might be of interest to our followers?
I think maybe in the mainstream, we gave a little bit too much credit to Mitch Trubisky for his performance in this game, and maybe not quite enough credit to Mike Glennon, and I don't want it to sound like Glennon played well or Mitch Trubisky played bad, because I don't think either of those things are true. But I thought Mike Glennon played better in this game than he did in the first one, and Mitch Trubisky struggled in this one as compared to how he played in the first one. And I think that got a little bit overlooked, especially from a box score standpoint. I mean, you saw people always remember the interception Mike Glennon threw and the near interceptions he almost threw, but I think that, and certainly that doesn't, I'm not trying to say it was good by him, but there were some other throws in that game that were more encouraging from him compared to what we saw against the Denver Broncos. And in the opposite direction with Mitch Trubisky, he was 6 of 8 on the stat sheet for 80 yards and a touchdown, but he had some poor throws in this game that, and a few plays that were nullified by penalties that you don't really think about when you go back and remember the big plays from the game. But when you look at both of these quarterbacks from a snap-by-snap basis, I think you saw both guys trend more towards the middle line there, of closer to average than they were in the previous week.
How much did the fact that Trubisky was playing with second and third string offensive linemen, that do you think that impacted his play?
I think we need to hold Mitch Trubisky to a certain standard as the number two overall pick. And I understand he's a rookie, but I think the fact that he's playing with a poorer offensive line and potentially poorer receivers, that can limit him, but at the same time, it's a different way to evaluate what he is. So he has to know, you know, yes, his offensive line was worse than it was last week, really, and is not nearly the quality of the starters, but at the same time, that's a new way to test your rookie quarterback, to say, okay, let's see what he does now when he's not getting as good of pass protection as you'd like to see. And that's something that is going to happen in his career in regular season games. The Bears have historically had poor offensive lines, and there's going to be times when he doesn't have good offensive lines. So what I wanted to see was not these miracle Aaron Rodgers plays where he breaks three tackles in the pocket, rolls to the left, breaks another tackle, rolls all the way back to the right, and finds some guy, you know, 15 seconds into the play, 40 yards downfield. But I just wanted to see a rookie quarterback go in there and understand when the defense is blitzing him, being able to recognize that and get rid of the ball quickly, find your hot route, or throw away the ball and just do whatever it takes to not take a hit, and don't always try and make the big play. Or if you're going to try to make the big play, do it early enough to avoid the contact. And that was where I was very critical of Mitch Trubisky in this one. He took a number of hits in this game that he really shouldn't have. And I, again, you can blame the offensive line, because a lot of the time it was an offensive line issue. But at the same time, you also want to see your future of the franchise quarterback rise above the cast around him, elevate the play of everyone else, and be that quarterback that can make everyone around him better and continue to thrive even when maybe his receivers aren't great and his offensive line's not great. And I know that seems like a lot for a rookie in his second preseason game, so I'm not trying to say that Mitch Trubisky was bad or that I was concerned long-term with anything from this performance, but just it was a new test for him, and he didn't pass it as excellently as he did last week with everything that was thrown against him against the Denver Broncos. Different opportunity, and he wasn't quite the, you know, the earth-shattering rookie quarterback that he looked like against the Denver Broncos.
All right, now let's talk about Glennon's play. Mechanically, what did you see in his play in the second preseason game that gave you some encouragement?
Yeah, he was a guy that, you know, again, not a good performance from him. And at the same time, I guess I'm holding out some kind of hope that once you get to the regular season, you see him more prepared. You see a full-strength offensive line in front of him, because, like I talked about with Trubisky, he's supposed to be the savior. He's supposed to be the next best or the next great thing at quarterback for the Chicago Bears. And I think I am holding Mitch Trubisky to a higher standard because of that than a Mike Glennon. I think we should hold Mitch Trubisky into a higher standard, especially as his career continues to grow here. Whereas I don't think Mike Glennon at this point is going to be a guy who raises the level of play of everyone around him. He is a quarterback that is going to need help from the offensive line, from the receivers, and certainly from the running back. And it was a very banged up team around him. So I don't want it to sound like, well, Mike Glennon gets excuses and Mitch Trubisky doesn't. But at the same time, that's sort of the standard that you're getting here. So again, Glennon was not good, and I'm not trying to excuse, you know, I don't want this to sound like a Mike Glennon apologist now, but what we started to see was him throw a little bit more consistently and understand some coverages a little bit better. And again, there were a few throws that were pretty wonky and pretty poor decisions, but at least we're starting to see a little bit more of growth and direction there. And you started to get a glimpse here of what this offense can do, a little bit how it's going to look in the regular season when he had a running game that was consistent, when Tariq Cohen was breaking off these big gains. It made things easier for Mike Glennon, and I think that's what the Bears are expecting come the regular season with Jordan Howard in the backfield.
Now, one of the things that I saw on your Twitter feed that I'd like to discuss with you is Kevin White. You posted something, I think you posted it on Twitter, a route that Kevin White ran, and you were critical of it, saying this is what a third-year receiver is doing, running routes. You know, can you talk a little bit about your disappointment with what you've seen from Kevin White so far?
Yeah, he's a guy that it's tough because he's played four games in the NFL, but at the same time, this is his third year, and he has been healthy all offseason and had most of an offseason last year. You know, the injury didn't happen until week four, so you know, as soon as he was recovered from the rookie year injury, he, you know, he went through training camp in the preseason. And so I want to see him now in year three be able to do the things that he doesn't need field experience to get better at. It's the, you know, he can run routes all day, every day in the summer. He can practice every single route on the tree. He can't practice, you know, press coverage against an NFL quality cornerback. He can't practice breaking tackles. So I'm okay if he is behind or still a work in progress in some of those areas. But what I want to see is him run crisp routes and do all of the things that a third-year wide receiver should be able to do even without a lot of NFL experience. It's just when he comes out in this game and then tries to run routes down the sideline and just can't create any sort of separation, even when the guy's not pressing him, he slows down on his breaks a little bit here and there, especially on comeback routes. It's really, it doesn't look even NFL caliber on those routes. And he's a guy that, you know, he wasn't known as an elite route runner by any means in college. And so I'm not expecting him to be, you know, a Cooper Kupp, like a rookie from this draft class, or some of those guys that have been just, or an Amari Cooper, any of these really crisp route runners. But I want to see him show some growth in that area, and we didn't see it in either of these two games. Really just doesn't look crisp, doesn't look smooth, looks like a guy that's still learning how to do the things that he should have been working on all summer.
Now let's do a flyover of the defense. You have, on today's show, today being Tuesday, your Locked On Bears show reviewed the tape of the Bears defense. I'll ask you the same question I asked for the offense. Is there anything that you can identify on the defensive side of the ball that most people in the media and the fans on social media are not talking enough about?
There's nothing as groundbreaking as, or at least as potentially notable as the quarterbacks, but a couple of guys that really stood out to me that I haven't seen get a lot of props or much praise this offseason was Marcus Cooper. I thought played really well against the Cardinals, his former team. He was targeted twice, and one of them was a really perfect throw and a perfect route that he was all over. Still was a reception, but not a play that I would say he was beat in coverage. So there's really one play in coverage on like 25-ish coverage snaps that he was actually beat in his coverage, and that's really exceptional for a cornerback on a new team in a new scheme. Really encouraged by him. And the other guy was Sam Acho at outside linebacker. He was a monster as a pass rusher against the backups in this game. A guy that's never really been known in that department, but when he was going against Arizona Cardinals offensive linemen, and I think, is Sam Acho a former Arizona Cardinal himself as well? I think he is.
Yeah, I think
so. Two former Cardinals in this game making some big plays with, you know, Cooper with the starters and Acho working in with the backups.
Tell me your evaluation about Kyle Fuller. He played 31 snaps and the reviews seem to be good. Do you agree?
I don't want to say he was good, but I don't want to say he was bad. I mean, statistically, it looked like he was targeted like 6 times and gave up 5 catches, but that wasn't as big of a deal to me because it did seem as though Carson Palmer was picking on him. And I talked about, you know, how well Cooper played for the majority of the game. The passes were all going to Kyle Fuller's side of the field, not always directly Kyle Fuller's coverage, but it seemed like that whatever side Kyle Fuller was on, that was where the ball was going. And a lot of times it was more a scheme thing that the Bears would have Kyle Fuller playing 5, 7, 8, 10 yards off the line of scrimmage pre-snap. And so the Cardinals would recognize that, and Carson Palmer would have his receiver on that side run 3 yards and then turn around and stand there. And so that counts as a target and a reception in Kyle Fuller's coverage. But it wasn't as though Kyle Fuller was beat or was bad in coverage. It was just sort of the Cardinals taking advantage of what Kyle Fuller was asked to do. So it wasn't as though he was bad in coverage, but I also don't think he was particularly good in coverage. There were a few plays where he was beaten and, you know, nothing super concerning. I mean, still a guy that I think is on the outside looking in at this point, but injuries at the cornerback position might be his way onto the 53. But the one area he really struggled was against the run, you know, getting blocked by wide receivers downfield and allowing running backs to get outside of him on the edge and not containing there. So that's probably the area more than coverage that I was concerned against the Cardinals.
Now, Pro Football Focus gave some really high grades to DeAndre Houston Carson's performance in the second preseason game. Do you see it the same way?
I thought at first, so they tried a new thing with DeAndre Houston Carson in this game, and actually they experimented with it against the Denver Broncos. You know, last week he was really bad as the safety, but they brought him in for a couple snaps at the slot cornerback position, and that was really strange to me because I didn't think that was a role that was a great fit for him in terms of what he's shown so far out of William and Mary. But they came into this game with Bryce Callahan out, Prince Amukamara out, Jonathan Banks out, so they were thin at the cornerback position. And so DeAndre Houston Carson was your number two slot cornerback for the entire second half. He was in there as the third cornerback with two other safeties on the field. And I thought early on there were a couple plays where he was out of place and let a guy wide open in coverage. But by the time the fourth quarter came around, and especially on that final two-minute drill, it seemed like he really settled down and played well, covered guys pretty tightly, came up against the run, and made a few plays here and there, although the Cardinals didn't run very much at all in the fourth quarter. So mostly coverage for DHC, and I thought for a guy that's sort of been inserted into the slot cornerback position, he looks surprisingly comfortable there.
All right, we have to talk about Roy Robertson-Harris, who was got a lot of accolades from Shane and Draft Dr. Phil on our last show. What was your evaluation of his play?
I thought it was a good step forward from a disappointing Denver Broncos game, but I also thought it was a little bit more flash than substance. I mean, he had 2 sacks in the game, and I don't want to take too much away from him for that, but I think you know, on his total performance as far as pass rushing goes, there were about three pass rushes that I thought were well done from him, and the rest were all iffy to unimpressive. You know, not always bad, but on 16 pass rushing snaps, he had the one of his sacks was really well done. He went up against the left guard, I believe, and beat him to the outside and got to Blaine Gabbert and brought him down. Very impressed there. But his first sack, and I believe it was actually the previous play, I think they were back-to-back, it was a play where Sam Acho did, or Christian Jones, I believe, did the dirty work on a blitz, came around the outside on a stunt and forced Blaine Gabbert up into the pocket. And Roy Robertson-Harris hadn't beaten his man, really. He was sort of just playing patty cake with him. But because Blaine Gabbert had come all the way up to him, all he had to do was step back from the offensive lineman and put his arms around the quarterback that had already come up to him. So it wasn't as though he won his pass rush on the play. He sort of took advantage and finished what everyone else had started. And so I don't give him a lot of credit for that as compared to his other sack, where he clearly won a one-on-one pass rush, had a good move, and finished at the quarterback. Those are the types of play I like to see. But the other sack, not as much of an impressive thing there, more of just taking advantage of everyone else. Similarly, against the run, he made a couple plays there, but there were a number of other plays, especially when he gets double-teamed, that he kind of just gets blown out of the line of scrimmage 3-4 yards downfield. And it's not as though I'm expecting Roy Robertson-Harris to split a double team and bring the running back down for a loss every time. But when you compare it to a Jay Howard, a Jonathan Bullard, even a C.J. Wilson at times in that game, when they get double teamed, it's not as though they're dominating both blockers, but they hold their position. They get low, they keep their hands on both blockers, and they don't let the guy, they don't let the blockers move him out of their gap. Whereas we saw a Roy Robertson-Harris really get blown out a few times against double teams. Still an area of growth for him, and still a guy that I think is on the outside looking in on the 53-man roster and might be more of a practice squad guy this year.
Very good. Before I let you go, I need to know from you, should Mitch Trubisky play with the number ones Sunday?
If I'm the coach, absolutely. I think he is more than ready for increased opportunities there. I'm not ready to say just yet that he should be your starting quarterback, but I do think he's better than Mike Glennon right now, so I think he should be working with the starters and can then have the opportunity to prove to you, this coaching staff, that he is ready to start potentially week one. But I think he still needs to be tested in a few more ways before I'm ready to truly hand him the reins just yet.
Very good. Lauren, tell people where they can find you on Twitter and promote anything you got going on.
I am on Twitter at CoxSports1. That's C-O-X Sports1. You did an excellent job of plugging everything that I would like to plug. So Locked On Bears Podcast, BearsWire.com, that's where my Chicago Bears stuff comes. And be sure to tune in to Bears Barroom Radio, because I know I will be back on there before long.
Woohoo! With dick jokes, I hope.
Oh, of course, aplenty.
All right, Lauren, thanks a lot for being on. Okay, listeners, before I let you run out, please, I want to let you know what we're doing with our podcast and how you can help us. You might have noticed that when I introduced Lauren in the middle of the show, I said he was a frequent guest on the Bears Barroom Radio Network. And that is because we're creating now a radio network where we're going to bring you three different shows during the season. Each of those shows will have a different format, a different feel. The first one is the one on Monday night called Bears Hour Live. It's a new version of the Lauren Cox Philitotion show. Phil and I will now be doing that show, and it's our opportunity to engage with you on all things Bears. We want to hear your rants. We want to hear your complaints. We want to hear your accolades. You want to hear your praise about all things Chicago Bears. And Shane Marsaw will be a frequent contributor on that show, and we hope you will be too. That's our live show that we will do on Monday night during the Monday night football game, so you can lower the volume on the Monday night football game and talk Bears football with us. Then that show will hit your podcast stream on the Bears Radio Network on Tuesday morning, in case you didn't catch the live cast. Then on Wednesday, you will receive our regular Bears Barroom show with Shane, myself, Phil, of course, and occasionally we'll welcome guests like Lauren and even Brian Perez expressed an interest in joining us for a show or two, and that would be a lot of fun. We get to bust his balls, and I'm sure he's pretty good at busting balls too. So we'll have a new name for that show. And that's where you come in. Phil, Shane, and I have been brainstorming some names that will that we need to, your help in making a final decision on the show name. So here are just some of the names that we've been kicking around. How about Bears on Tap, Bearing It All, Bears No Axis. That's a playoff of another show name. Bears No Axis. That's pretty cool. Bears Straight Up, Bears with a Twist. We've got about 20 names that we've identified, and we're gonna narrow it down and then ask for your help. You can vote on Twitter or you can vote on Facebook, and you can send your own suggestions too. Maybe you got a better idea than us, and I'm sure you're gonna send us some funny ones that the FCC would not allow anyone to run anywhere, but we'd love to get a chuckle if you got some funny ones to send us. So that's the second show, the old Bears Barroom Radio Show. It will have a new name, and you will help us choose that name. Now, finally, the third show of the week that we will be offering you on the network is one that's similar to what you heard on today's podcast, except there's one difference to it. I will be interviewing in the first part of the show someone who offers a unique insight into the Bears, like Brian or Lauren or someone else. And then I will talk to a blogger in the second half of the show, a blogger or reporter who covers that week's upcoming Bears opponent. So it'll allow us to get a good handle on what that team is looking like, how they're playing, who are their weapons, and so forth. The title for that show is still to be determined. My wife says that she's going to name that show, so expect something really, sorry, honey, really gay. Anyway, so three shows every week during the 17-week regular season, and maybe we'll even have some playoff shows. Wouldn't that be nice, right? So Bears Hour Live on Monday nights with Philotoshin and me, and that show will hit your podcast stream on Tuesday if you're not able to join in live, and we'll have information on how to, you know, get on to that live show. We'll get out all that to you. Then in the middle of the week, our signature barroom show, that's where we need your help with a new title. And then at the end of the week, I will interview a Bears analyst and someone who covers the opposing team that the Bears are playing that week. One other thing, please tell your friends about what we're doing. Give us a good review on iTunes, Podbean. Retweet the show out. Let the world know that we're here, and also let them know that if they drink, please don't drive, and always bear down.